Today is November 30th, 2017. Welcome to the Polymath Project. This is Armand, I'm your host. And today's topic and theme is going to be related to units of measure. Everything from how we measure our time, how we measure our energy, which often translates into different forms of currency. Different forms of currency that we get paid for and in, and that we use to exchange for goods and to buy the things we need in order to live our lives and support our families. One of the very interesting new models and trends and opportunities and changes that we're seeing in the space of currency is blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. Most people by now have heard and read in the media at least something about it. It is a very, very interesting and growing trend, and more so than a trend, becoming a new form of currency, a new way to essentially exchange and measure value that is starting to really raise a lot of eyebrows. There's a lot of implications for governments, for the way banking and monetary systems work. And everyone's really trying to grapple with how to, A, understand it, and B, deal with it. How do we regulate this? What's the true value of it compared to, let's say, other forms of currency and other types of technology? So I'm gonna do my best here, as I'm also in a learning curve and process in relation to blockchain, and I think we all are, but I'm in the early learnings of how to understand what it is, how to talk about it. So that's what today's episode and project will be about. A project is to better understand blockchain, which is inevitably becoming and going to be something that we all have to kind of deal with and interact with in one way or another. So I thought a good way to start it off would be to watch a video, after which we'll come back and look at some different graphics and kind of really try to map out so that we can explain and get some visuals and context for how blockchain works and how the different types of blockchain technologies, companies and tools like Bitcoin and others function, and how it's relevant to our lives, our day-to-day lives. So let's take a quick look at this video that I think does a nice job of explaining what the blockchain is and how Bitcoin works.
What is Bitcoin mining? Bitcoin operates as a peer-to-peer network. This means that everyone who uses Bitcoin is a tiny fraction of the bank of Bitcoin. But where do Bitcoins come from? With paper money, a government decides when to print and distribute money. Bitcoin doesn't have a central government. With Bitcoin, miners use special software to solve math problems and are issued a certain number of Bitcoins in exchange. This provides a smart way to issue the currency and also creates an incentive for more people to mine. And since miners are required to approve Bitcoin transactions, more miners means a more secure network. The Bitcoin network automatically changes the difficulty of the math problems, depending on how fast they're being solved. In the early days, Bitcoin miners solved these math problems with the processors in their computers. Soon, miners discovered that graphics cards used for gaming were much better suited to this kind of math. Graphics cards are faster, but they use more electricity and generate a lot of heat. The first commercial Bitcoin mining products included chips that were reprogrammed for mining Bitcoin. These chips were faster, but still power-hungry. ASIC, or application-specific integrated circuit chips, are designed specifically for Bitcoin mining. ASIC technology has made Bitcoin mining even faster while using less power. As the popularity of Bitcoin increases, more miners join the network, making it more difficult for individuals to solve the math problems. To overcome this, miners have developed a way to work together in pools. Pools of miners find solutions faster than their individual members, and each miner is rewarded proportionate to the amount of work he or she provides. Mining is an important and integral part of Bitcoin that ensures fairness while keeping the Bitcoin network stable, safe, and secure. For more information about Bitcoin mining, visit bitcoinmining.com.
So hopefully that didn't confuse you more than to help explain how Bitcoin works and mining. I mean, I know even myself looking at it with one part of my brain saying, what does mining and solving math problems have to do with currency? Well, it's a creative way that these, you know, computer programmers basically came together and determined this was a method for them to essentially issue currency. Because our current forms of currency, like let's say the US dollar, you know, we have the Fed and we have the government that basically controls the circulation and the supply of money. And, you know, then how that works with foreign exchange and other governments, every government kind of makes their choices about how they want to control or manage their currency, which then leads to things like exchange rates between different forms of currency. What happens when a country's in trouble or, you know, can't pay its debts? Its currency gets significantly devalued, and people in that country that think they have a lot of money all of a sudden don't have money that's worth much at all. So it's a very, very interesting and real subject. I mean, it has real implications on people. Look at what's happened in Greece, many other countries where the currency is getting inflated or deflated, really impacts what people can buy, what they can do. Here in the US, we tend to have more sense of stability because the dollar is generally strong and our economy has been generally stable or stable enough for us to continue having a generally predictable understanding of what our money can get us. We also control a lot of the world's banking and finances is based on the value of the dollar. What's happening with blockchain is it's, again, as the video said, it's not controlled by any government, which is why Bitcoin and blockchain are a threat in certain ways to governments and regulators and people that want to control things. And blockchain, another way of describing it is that it's a kind of distributed computing model. And it doesn't just apply to currency. Blockchain can be used in a number of other ways. I actually have an infographic I'm pulling up here we can look at about, in this particular infographic, this is more of a transactional model, but the transaction doesn't always have to be monetary. So in this case, someone wants to send money to another person, and that transaction is represented online as a block, you know, hence blockchain. And the block is broadcast to every party in the network. So you have distributed computing that actually helps avoid fraud and people from just hacking one system that has the information. In this case, multiple systems share the same chain of information. Those in the network, multiple people actually have to approve the transaction. Most of this is now automated through software. And then the block can be added to the chain, which provides transparency of records for the transaction, and then the money moves. So this can be worked, obviously, in financial and finance. Big banks are starting to adopt this and use it in ways that makes their transactions more secure and even faster. I'm going to pull up another infographic here that shows other ways that blockchain technology can be used and explored. So, the analogy that I've heard some people talk about, and I'm still trying to determine if I think there's a great analogy, but it's interesting for a certain component, is that this is, it's basically like the Wild West. It's the very, very early days of, let's say, the internet or even email, where when there's not a lot of people using email, it's not as valuable. It's a very early stage. Email was invented in 1972. Most of us didn't hear about it till the mid-90s. And start using it regularly until like the 2000s and beyond. So this is very early days for blockchain technology, where a bunch of computer programmers and super technical folks that understand this, that built it, know the value of it and how it can be used to help scale and solve major issues. And now it's becoming a little more user-friendly, accessible, and relevant for kind of the rest of us, let's say. And very soon it's going to become something mainstream. So a lot of great opportunities, and here's just a list of some of them. It could be used for smart contracts, for real estate management, for stock exchanges, for health record management, cross-border transactions, again, because it's not governed by any central government. There's still issues in certain countries it's banned, but not too many. I think there's a list of 5 or 6. So how countries and governments decide to treat this, they're all trying to figure out how to deal with it now. If one invests in Bitcoin and your value grows, is that taxable income? Well, every government's going to have a different take on that. And it's one of these things that happens in technology. When it accelerates, it's usually ahead of the curve, and governments and regulators and people that have established a certain method of doing things have to figure out, how do we keep up with this? How do we even deal with these issues and questions? So these are some very interesting areas that it can be used. Let's look at some other graphics. Basically, my goal here today and the point of today's project is to try to collectively come together to understand what this is and how it's relevant to us today and how it's going to become something more relevant going forward. Because I do feel strongly that, let's take Bitcoin for example, which is a form of currency, but if I can't use that currency to buy something on Amazon, what's the use of it? Is it just an investment? And then when I actually need to spend, I need to pull it out and then use my credit card? Can I pay my credit card bills with it? So actually back in 2014, Overstock.com became the first major online retailer to accept Bitcoin because their CEO was very much an advocate of decentralizing currency and kind of anti-government control over currency, because there's a lot of things that can come along with that control. And so it's very intriguing when retailers allow Bitcoin to be used for purchases. In certain countries, like in Japan, there's hundreds of stores that accept Bitcoin. I actually believe there's an infographic here, let me pull it up, that has a lot of very interesting Bitcoin factoids. And let's take a look. Let's actually take a look and go through some of these together, right? So, and this is from a cool website called blockchainhub.net, 58 facts about Bitcoin. And later we'll look at kind of the stock value of and trends of some of these cryptocurrencies. Because Bitcoin is really just the first one. There's several others, numerous others, but Bitcoin's obviously the most well-known one. About the inventors, right? No single entity or government has control. By September 2017, around 16.5 million Bitcoins are in circulation. So again, as opposed to currency that can continue to get printed and then devalue the currency, Bitcoins are restricted. The number of Bitcoins are restricted, which thereby increases the value of them. Just like when there's limitation of anything, as opposed to ease of just duplicating and creating more money and putting it in circulation. Bitcoins, at least at this point, are limited to 21 million, the maximum that there can be. So those miners that we saw in the video that solve those math problems, by doing that, that's what releases from the 16.5 million currently in circulation to eventually 21 million. And then by their charter, by kind of the rules that they set when they formed Bitcoin, 21 million would be the max. Okay, let's look at some other interesting facts here. 69% of banks participated in the survey and are experimenting with blockchain, right? So it's not this like fringe thing anymore, like it seemed it was several years ago, like this black market kind of shady way of moving money. I mean, that the media and certain governments tried to portray it that way because it was a threat to them, but now it's reached the point, we've reached that critical mass where, and that threshold above which where there's really no turning back. Now it's about understanding, embracing, and kind of learning how to utilize And of course, there's going to be many people that come in and try to control and then get their cut and make sure people aren't doing things using these technologies and kind of evading taxes and things of that nature. So, of course, governments are going to come into play, but the fact that big banks are participating is an encouraging sign. And big companies like Google here, as you see, and folks like Richard Branson are investing major money, $40 million in this case, from these companies. Bitcoin market cap of $75 billion by the end of August 2017, which is raised dramatically since then. As I'll show you the numbers, I mean, that's a whole nother topic of considering whether you want to actually consider this as an asset class when you're trying to invest your money in stocks or bonds or keep it in cash or invest in startups. Now, cryptocurrency, starting with Bitcoin, but the many others, have a whole marketplace where you can trade them, buy them, sell them, and the values are going up astronomically at the moment. There's a lot of talk of a bubble, and it seems like there absolutely is an overvaluation happening, which is what happens at the beginning of any new market where it just kind of booms. So we're in the boom. We'll see what happens when the bust comes and what the impact is. So I'm not going to encourage anyone or advise anyone to invest, but I will be on disclosure and say I've started to look into that and put a little money in just to kind of see how it works and you know, get in on the action, so to speak. What other interesting factoids can we see here? It's interesting that FBI owns some percentage of Bitcoin. You could see some of the efficiencies, like this point number 13 here, that you know, blockchain ledger technology, when used by top 10 investment banks, could save $8 to $12 billion through, again, so this is, think about blockchain as like an efficient and smart technology that can actually help create efficiencies in the world. And we could go on and on here, but I just want to bring up a couple of interesting concepts. Okay, it is actually the way you secure your assets if you do invest in this is very interesting, very hard to explain, but you have to make sure you retain certain kind of codes and information. And if you lose that information, you will lose access to be able to your assets. So, you know, as they say, this losing your wallet and the codes that are within that wallet is basically like losing the keys to be able to get in. There's not an easy way, and in some cases, no way to recover that, which is a bit of a risk. Okay, one or two other factoids from here and then we'll move on. Okay, this one's interesting. Look at number 35. The University of Nicosia in Cyprus was the first university to accept fees in bitcoins. Very cool. So this is the practicality of it, where can I use this? We talked about overstock. You could use it here for this university. Japan, as I mentioned, has a number of retailers. Virgin Galactic Space Travel Club accepts Bitcoin. Other big companies, including Microsoft, Dell, Expedia, well-known companies there. And actually, I had the number wrong there. 300,000 stores in Japan as of 2017 are accepting it. Okay, since April 1st, 2017, Bitcoin is legal payment method in Japan. And then you could see some of the tax issues here in 46 and 47 in Belgium and Finland, that they're allowing it to be actual tax exempt. Switzerland, of course. See some countries there listed that have actually got Bitcoin banned right now just because they're not sure how to deal with it. Understandable, but not... hopefully not sustainable and long-lasting. Some people are calling for it to be banned. So very, very interesting facts and figures. Let us go to quickly look. We talked about investing. Check this out. This is a stock chart of, it's not stock, it's Bitcoin, so it's a different kind of asset. of the value and the growth of Bitcoin from over the last year. So the price a year ago was $758 per Bitcoin. The price today is $9,700. So it's a 1,200% growth. So if you invested, you know, $1,000, you'd have, you know, $12,000 right now, a year later, which is obviously astronomical growth there. And again, Bitcoin, just to explain clearly, is one of and the most popular and the most highly valued of several thousand, a couple of thousand different coins or cryptocurrencies that are now available. So each currency, like Bitcoin, you can see here Ethereum and Litecoin, and I have a list here of a number of others. Let me see if I can pull that up. Bear with me while I navigate. If I can find it, I'll just pull up a new, here, this is a great website to consider, coinmarketcap.com, right? So we could see here CoinMarketCap, there's actually 1,300 up in this corner here, 1,318, so 1,318 different cryptocurrencies and 7,000 different markets. And so you could see the top rated ones here, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so on, and the respective market caps of each, how much volume there is, how many units are in circulation, and so on. So this gets into a lot of detail, but I just want to explain as best as I can that all of these different cryptocurrencies aren't just currencies. There's also companies behind them that offer certain services. So let's say Ripple, for example, on this list, and you can read about all that. You could read about the management teams, and if you're interested in possibly understanding these companies and maybe supporting or investing in them, you know, then I would encourage you to come to this website or others like it. This one's the best one I've seen so far that actually lists all the different cryptocurrencies and talks about the companies and the technologies behind them. So Ripple, I believe, offers certain kind of financial technology that we referenced in the previous infographic that these big investment banks are using to speed up and improve the way they manage their ledgers and transactions. Other ones address health records and some of those other uses we looked at before about how blockchain is being used. It's basically a smart technology that's being used in a number of ways. And then the companies that are growing their services and their products within those technologies are using these markets. So instead of having an IPO, an initial public offering on let's say the New York Stock Exchange or one of these known, well-known stock markets, these companies are raising money through what's called ICOs, initial coin offerings. And it's a way for people without intermediaries and investment bankers and all that to invest directly into these companies in a way that's really not regulated right now. So that's therein is where lies some risks, and it's where everyone has to make their own choices if they want to explore or invest in these technologies. I think the investment is only one part of it. I think it comes down to trying to understand why this is an interesting phenomenon in the world, why governments and different folks, traditional and institutions that are in very strong money management positions right now, governments, banks, financial advisors, investment banks specifically, are all kind of trying to figure out how to deal with this new wave of technology. So I'm going to leave it at that. Again, it's very early in the game. And I myself am continuing to learn and explore this. I'm going to continue going deeper here. I have a lot of friends in high finance. I've started talking to them, and you know, there's a variety of different opinions people have on it. So in future shows, in the very near future, we'll be bringing some of those experts on and folks that have some perspective. And we'll continue watching this and seeing how it continues to evolve and how different governments, institutions, and companies, like we mentioned, Dell and Microsoft and Google, everyone's discussing and figuring out, and the entrepreneurial folks and the venture capital type folks are extremely interested because there's a tremendous opportunity, there's a tremendous market for this, and it's going to impact the lives of everyone in some way or another. And I believe there's a very positive kind of vibration and opportunity. And of course, like anything, there's a dark side to it and negative potential there as well. But there is an energy to it, and there is more than just a fleeting trend. This is something very serious. I would call it an extension and kind of a new era within the whole kind of internet and digital space. So when we go from having the internet as a connective tool to having these smartphones, which we've only had for, you know, 7-10 years or less, taking the power of the internet and now putting it in people's hands in a mobile fashion, that's a perfect example of a next generation kind of evolution to another level of connectivity. This is something just like that. This is going to take the way we exchange and interact, share value, measure value, units of measure, really to a new place, and a place that I believe has a lot of positive opportunities. Speaking of which, we'll take a little, not tangent, but I think evolution from this concept of units of measure. And we've been talking a lot about very tangible things and currencies and how they're valued. Again, as I said at the top, units of measure, how we measure our lives, how we measure the way we feel, obviously amounts to more than just material and tangible things. We talk about time. We talk about time a lot, how we spend our time, how we spend our energy, and what the meaning of that is, why it's so important, because it's unpredictable how much of it we're going to have in this body, in this human vessel that I have, that everyone listening has today. We really don't know how much more of that we are going to have, which is why I give and put so much importance on being in the moment and valuing ourselves and valuing the time we have and making sure we are using it wisely and investing it in the things that bring us true fulfillment and understanding truly what our purpose is, why we're here, what we need to do today, right now, to align closer to our core, to our being, and to really be centered and grounded in our mission, to the extent that we can, to the extent that we've actually been able to connect with that. So on that note, I would like to take a quick look at another video, and then we'll come back and talk about it. This one's from the movie Lucy. I won't give you too much context for it. Hopefully you've seen it. If you haven't, I strongly advise you to. But the character, the main character in the movie, just to set it up, has had some kind of drug or chemical that has kind of come into her bloodstream that has given her a kind of superpower and ability to kind of use her brain and her mind in ways that are way beyond what we typically as human beings can do. You know, these studies that talk about the fact that we can only access generally 10% of our brain power and our capabilities. And when we look at people that accomplish great feats or are able to tap into their subconscious and really bring kind of a special knowledge or energy into their lives, this is an example of someone who's reaching that level of clarity and brilliance. And you can hear what she has to say to a group of scientists that are very smart people intellectually, but that have certain limitations that she's been able to transcend. So I've said enough. Let's look at the clip and we can talk about it a little bit more afterwards. But pay attention to what she says about time at the end of the clip.
Electrical impulses. Every cell knows and talks to every other cell. They exchange 1,000 bits of information between them per second. Cells group together, forming a giant web of communication, which in turn forms matter. Cells get together, take on one form, deform, reform. Makes no difference, it's all the same. Humans consider themselves unique, so they've rooted their whole theory of existence on their uniqueness. One is their unit of measure, but it's not. All social systems we put into place are a mere sketch. 1 + 1 = 2, that's all we've learned. But 1 + 1 has never equaled 2. There are, in fact, no numbers and no letters. We've codified our existence to bring it down to human size, to make it comprehensible. We've created a scale so that we can forget its unfathomable scale.
But if humans are not the unit of measure, and the world isn't governed by mathematical laws, what governs all that?
Film a car speeding down a road. Speed up the image infinitely, and the car disappears. So what proof do we have of its existence? Time gives legitimacy to its existence. Time is the only true unit of measure. It gives proof to the existence of matter. Without time, we don't exist.
Time is unity.
Powerful stuff. Time is the only unit of measure. So I'll leave you with that that thought today. We talked a lot about currency as a unit of measure. Obviously, when we work, we put our time and effort and energy and expertise into things, and then we exchange that unit for some kind of barter of other things we need or currency. Money we get paid really for that essential unit of measure, which is our time and our energy. Pretty profound statement there, and reality, I believe. So the project for today is to take what you've heard here, what you already know about the blockchain technology, cryptocurrencies, and do a little bit more research on your own using some of the resources and reference material we provided, or talking to folks, financial folks and other people that you know that may be hearing about it. There is a lot of media and buzz, articles on Forbes and Financial Times and all over the place, which are useful. But I would say take some time with this. Let's all collectively spend some time, spend some energy, and not rush to judgment and try to form those kind of quick judgments, because this is something that is going to continue to evolve. I believe it's going to be important in a number of ways, both on a business level and also personally for people. And there's also some opportunity here for entrepreneurs, for business owners, and all of us to a degree. So that'll be our kind of homework. And I'll be back, as I mentioned before, to talk about it with some other experts and people that are involved in one way or another over the coming sessions and weeks. So signing off for now. Hope you have a great day and a great week. Take care.